3-2 overtime win against the Kings. They finished the road trip at 2-2. And again, I guess it all depends on when you win your games, right? If they go 2-2 on the road trip, they win the first two, and then they lose the games on the weekend. What conversation are we having this morning? Instead, they lose the first two. The thought going into the games on the weekend was, this could be make or break in terms of big trade, coaching change, whatever. And instead, they win the two, and deservedly so. Played well in both the wins. Suddenly, people are feeling a little bit better about things as we kick off the week as the Sens return home to face the New York Rangers coming up on Wednesday. All right, it's J.R. Simmer is back from holiday alongside Hammer. Let's get right to the phones and welcome our TSN Hockey Insider this morning. That would be none other than Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. I was having flashbacks last night to when I first got into the business in 2014, and I did a lot of That's Hockey Tonight, the late night show. And we would go through and do the first rendition of that show at about 11 or 11:30 when the East Coast games were over. Then we had to wait till the West Coast game ended. And it was a 10:30 start in San Jose most nights, and the West Coast teams were all big at that point. And it was going into overtime, and there were more whistles than there were in any other game in the history of hockey, which is what it felt like last night. Like, the 8-minute delay in the first period was one thing, but the ice was slow. The passing on both sides, I think, was a reflection of the ice guys. When I would sit and watch a basketball game in the fourth quarter and then play that night, I mean, the ice looked terrible and the game was sloppy, but the number of whistles was staggering, and it got later and later. And then it's out of principle, right? Then I'm like, I'm staying up and watching the end. There's no way I'm staying up this late, not watching the end. So certainly a happy ending.
And to that, Pooley, is that still impressive from an Ottawa side? I mean, that's a long trip, and on a late Sunday night game, pretty gutsy effort.
No question about it. And, you know, I heard JR talking about the timing of the wins on a trip. And to be able to battle through, you don't know what's going to trigger it for this team. Certainly getting Zoo back is a step. And then get Shabbat back and see them both in the lineup together. And then see what it does to Jake Sanderson, who's carried the mail without those two guys in the lineup, but now gets to settle in a little bit in the third pairing. And 5-on-5, they were good last night, guys. I went through their numbers, you know, at length, and 5-on-5, they were good. And they gave up the two power play goals, both to Kelly Evan. In both situations, one item that is of, I don't know how to quite to address it, because it's not like you're telling the player something they don't know, but the clears on the power play, particularly by the defenseman, has to get better. Has to. It can't be on their tape and not be down 200 feet. I mean, whether you stand on your own goal line and blast it as far as you can down the ice 100 times in practice, but it can't be anything near a soft play on that. That would be a frustration if I were DJ Smith. But once again, it's not like they're not being told not to clear it. They just really struggle in that one simple little thing. And they were, I think, fortunate at the start of the third period. That's where they, you know, came out a little bit back on their heels. But yes, Simmer, I couldn't agree more on slow ice on a Sunday night when all the other games are done and you're waiting to play and you come out and find a way to get 2 points. You could see the celebration. You could see the energy. That wasn't just a win, guys. And hopefully that propels them into the next series of games.
You killed penalties your entire career. It was part of your toolkit, as it were. Just on those clears that you talk about, it's often the ones that to go up the boards that aren't shot hard enough or whatever it might be that gets stopped. What is the thinking among most coaches, most players about choosing to try to clear it up the middle of the ice, knowing the risk is if it gets knocked down, you're giving somebody an opportunity in the middle of the ice?
The more license you have, the more you use the whole ice. And I say that when I got to Boston, I played with some good penalty killers in Philadelphia, Mark Howe and Brad Crimmin on the back end, but might have been my first or second game in Boston. I was standing in front of our own net shorthanded, and Ray Bourque put a bullet pass right on my tape, and it shocked me. And I fired it down the ice, and he came off the ice and said, "Yeah, I'm allowed to use the middle of the ice." And I'm like, "Yes, you are." But it was as simple as that. And so I think you earn the right to use the whole ice. But high off the glass is still high off the glass. And I don't mean off the boards waist high. I mean high off the glass is still a threat that you are going to eat it if you're, you know, if you're at the top of the power play, that you might get that in the head because it's hard to pick up coming off the glass. And so I think it's something that you prepare for, JR, and it's a mentality that happens before you get the puck. Before you get the puck, you know the second you get it. Now, there's a combination of poise and deliverance here. You have to, you know, you can't pound it into somebody. But if your job is to kill penalties, one of the primary jobs is to be able to fire it 200 feet so no one can touch it.
And you talk a lot, Pooley, about leverage, and that is, to me, one of the weaknesses of the Sens defense. There's not a lot of guys that kill plays that truly do that. Is that also just a sign of simple fatigue? I've battled as hard as I can to actually get the puck, and you can say all you want, but it's not a lack of execution. It's just the energy or trying. The energy's just not there to finish the play.
It might be, certainly, Simmer, and it could also be a case of, you know, now they're getting healthy. And, you know, Zub is better at it than other guys are.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just is. He's better at it. He is stronger on his stick, and strength on stick is a huge, huge factor. Now, I think Jake Sanderson has an excellent stick as well. I think it'll feel its way out now with both Shabbat and Sanderson healthy on how people are being deployed and left rights, and you know, getting Holden out there maybe a little bit later in a kill, and it'll just be more effective use of the personnel if you have all the personnel.
Through the early season struggles, DJ Smith has said very often, almost to the frustration of a lot of fans, of, hey, our underlying numbers are really good. You know, at some point, whether it's luck or however you want to attribute it, it's all got to even out at some point. These last two games, and if we say, okay, Anaheim's not very good, and the Sens were full value for the win there. But last night, LA is a good team, right? They were going into the game last night, ninth overall in the NHL standings. Does the fact that Ottawa, you mentioned their 5-on-5 play, 35-24 were the shots 5-on-5 in Ottawa's favor, does that kind of show that, you know, not that they're completely over the hump from early in the season, but maybe that luck or whatever it is starting to even itself out a little bit?
Well, it inevitably does. And, you know, I look at the numbers closely, too. And I remember sitting down with DJ when we were in Philadelphia. So what's that, a couple weeks ago on a Saturday afternoon? And I had all of my my back numbers, if you will, which we get supplied before the game. And it was staggering, the difference between them and Philadelphia. Staggering. And at that point, Philadelphia might have been four games over 500. And if I'm not, I mean, I might be mistaken, I'm not sure they've won a game since. They're 10 winless. And that could have been the start of it. And we talked about that exact point, JR, is that this has to even out. Well, for Philadelphia, it looked like the world was perfect and rosy and everything was, you know, all about what they'd done in the offseason and the, you know, their new coach and everything being perfect and boom. And all of a sudden they're 10 winless in a row. So I'd take the numbers. You have to find a way to translate them into wins. And I will take you to your captain last night on that first goal, guys. That is someone just absolutely overpowering the centerman he's playing against. He's got a shift against Blake Lizotte, and he wins a face-off on his backhand. But you watch the way he manhandles that player on the way to the net to be in position for that short side rebound off the boards. And that's just a guy who – and then he did it again on a play out to Stützle in the first period. It should have been 2-0 behind the net. And so the strength – that Brady Tkachuk shows in that play, and then obviously the pass to DeBrincat. And I thought MJ made an excellent point between periods when he said that's a tool that he wasn't sure that Brady Tkachuk had in his toolbox when he came in the league, and that's the patience. A lot of times, if you think when he got the puck below the goal line, he took a hard step out and tried to jam it in on the short side. In that play, he got the puck, looked, waited, and threaded a perfectly placed pass through right onto the blade of DeBrincat. And so I think your captain's will last night on a couple of occasions really showed through and were rewarded.
In regards to the Kings, Pooley, I've never been bullish kind of on the here and now or the future. Just kind of thoughts on their overall program, because they're another team to me that don't really look at the numbers, and I think their record is a little better than a reflection of the actual club.
I would agree. You know, I like some of the changes they've made, and you look at a shorter term change and you look at, you know, they drafted a couple guys really high. The Turcotte kid, I think he was fifth overall. And then of course, Quinton Byfield was second overall, the pick before Timmy Stützle, and Turcotte was number five. And those two in particular haven't really turned out and are still kind of, you know, brewing in the minors, if you will. But the Deno trade or Deno signing looks, you know, terrific in the way he is sort of elevated. And it's more the mix of players. Like, they've got some guys that are almost specialists in a weird sort of way. Like the Kaliev that scored the two goals, you know, I remember well from his days when he dominated the OHL, but a lot of it was on the power play. And so, you know, and Kupari, just not quite sure yet. Drew Doughty's still a big part of the mix on the backside. But it, to me, they're still waiting. And then a guy that, you know, Ottawa people are familiar with because he's a native is Brant Clark. So they're still waiting on some of their top picks, I think, to come through. And yet, as you said, they're sitting in the top 10 in the league right now. So I think they're fine with the way they're going right now, the direction they're going in.
Hard to say because we just haven't seen a lot of Quinton Byfield. He's suffered some injuries this year. He's, you know, his progress has been stalled by illness. But, you know, as it sits right now, you're in the American Hockey League. If you are sitting in a management meeting in L.A. or in Ottawa, because that pick came down to L.A. deciding, you know, by all accounts, it was either Byfield or Stützle, and we know the way that it's played itself out. Are you feeling like if you're Los Angeles that you made a mistake? Or too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell with the big guys. You know, I look at a Tage Thompson, you know, a great big guy who dominated the game because he was so big early. And that's the way Quinton Byfield was in junior, guys. He's just so much bigger than everybody else. So you almost have to relearn how to play the game when you're that size. And let's not forget, you know, Lafreniere went number one in that pick. And you know, and the Rangers are still kind of like, you know. So in a way, Ottawa being in the third hole didn't have to choose one of those two guys.
Right.
And you might say, you know, if you're arguably looking at that, I'm a big Lucas Raymond guy, you know, who went fourth overall to Detroit. But if you're looking at that draft, and I know even, you know, a lot of Ottawa fans, when they saw Jamie Drysdale step right in the league and he was the sixth pick in that draft, say, wow, did we, you know, should we have taken Sanderson? But Ottawa may have gotten the two best players in that draft right now, guys, in Timmy Stützle and Jake Sanderson. And, you know, the Sanderson-Drysdale thing, you've got two really good players. And the Stützle-Raymond thing, you've got two really good players. I'm not sure you don't take Stützle and Sanderson in that draft right now.
You just ruined my next question, Pooley. So I will. But I understand with Byfield, and I totally agree. I use that term all the time, untangled. But even after that first World Junior, I had seen enough of, and what concerns me about Byfield is the hockey sense that I felt pretty quickly that, hey, Timmy Stützle, and the fact that he moved to the middle, and I don't know if other people had talked about wanting to be a centerman, I may have, anyways. But don't you, as you said, that like that's pretty impressive from an Ottawa standpoint, right? Like people always say, oh, you had the high picks. Well, yeah, I mean, franchise altering, right? When you look at that, you look what Philadelphia did in taking Nolan Patrick, you look at, you know, Kotkaniemi to Brady Tkachuk. You have to give Ottawa a lot of credit, both in Tkachuk and those couple of picks, man. It could have been complete different direction for this club had they not hit on those.
There's no question. And by the way, Simmer, with a week off, you've got to have more than one question loaded up for the next question. Okay, but come on. I mean,
we got these 5-hour shows with all the soccer coverage, Dave. So we got to save it.
Our grinder for the week here, and you come in loaded up.
I was on Hockey DB looking at that draft. To be honest with you, that was exactly what I was thinking.
No, you know, but I think that the hockey sense question is a hard question for some of those guys. And I think it comes into play with Kirby Dach as well in Chicago. You know, they played him with Patrick Kane and decided they weren't sure about his hockey sense. Well, you could play Einstein with Patrick Kane and be not sure about his hockey sense. But it looks just fine in the role they're using him now. So it may be something where LA says, can we employ Byfield in the same way right now that Montreal is employing Dach, where they've unleashed him by putting him on the wing without giving him responsibility of playing center. And he's almost a point-a-game guy, but he's also doing what you want a big guy to do, playing physical, playing along the wall. And they don't have to when they're younger because they're so dominant. And it equates with the lightning-fast skater. If I just skate by you, why do I have to learn how to beat you? And, you know, and so sometimes with the best skaters, it takes them longer. You know, Alex Formanton, Athanasiou, guys that were just with blinding speed, never really had to learn to play the game until they got to the highest level. So I think the jury will still be out with Quentin Byfield. But if you're going back in that draft, and I know people do this all the time, you know, reloading up the draft and seeing how it shakes out. Boy, the number three and number five picks right now look pretty good.
Mm. We are just past U.S. Thanksgiving. We're at the 20 or 21 game mark. So we're at the quarter pole of the season, as you know, the thought always has been. You kind of know what you are by the quarter pole. So in your estimation, you've either done or watched all of the Ottawa games this year. What, in the estimation of Dave Poulin, are the Ottawa Senators?
I think they're a good young club. And, you know, they've been through some injury things that other teams are going to go through. And to keep players at key times, you could say, well, everyone gets injuries. Well, they do. But they might not have, you know, two of their top six defensemen out or two of their top three defensemen out at the same time. And even if it's only for four or five games. And, you know, and they haven't had, I'd like to see a healthy grouping of the goaltending situation here where they really got to play. You know, Talbot got his three in a row, then got a game off, then Forsberg got two, then back to Talbot for two, then Forsberg for three, some sort of rotation. So I think they're a good young club. It may not happen this year for them in the manner that people wanted it to. But I think things are going in the right direction. I think you're seeing individuals. Guys, I am so impressed with Brady Tkachuk. And, you know, we knew Brady brought an element. I'm not sure that people saw the offensive side of this. And if, you know, if they did, so be it. But I'm just not sure they saw the offensive side of this.
He's on pace for 98 points.
You know,
98.
Well, you might say the same thing about Matthew, that people didn't see the offensive piece of that either. But boy, oh boy, it is so impressive to watch what's going on with that and, you know, how dominant he is. But, you know, as we've already talked about, the rounding out of the game, it's not just in one manner. He's making plays. He's doing things. You know, so that face-off goal that he scores last night, that comes off starting at the center position, you know, on that play and how strong he is on face-offs on that side. And so, you know, I think back to your question, I think this is a good young hockey club. It might not quite be where people want it to be, but there was a mixed feeling coming into the year on where they'd be right now. You know, my goal would be the next game, and you're four games under 500 now. And my goal, my quiet goal, like I set quiet goals as a player, and I know you don't want to get ahead of yourself and everything, but I'd be really focused on being 500 at the Christmas break.
Yeah, and I look at that Pooley as well, and I kind of look big picture, all the things off the ice with the franchise. The couple of things in the back of my mind always are, how do you have forward progress after this year if Zub walks out the door? And at the same time, how would you handle the DeBrincat situation? Because as bold of a move that was, the 1 year at $9 million obviously either sets up for a one-year qualifier at nine, a long-term extension, or a trade.
Well, I think when you set that up as the agent, you set that up with Chicago going through transition in mind. And that's not what it is right now. And so you can say what you want about the $9 million qualifier. I'm trying to sign Alex DeBrincat to a long-term deal, and the number's not starting with a nine. It's simply not. And, you know, those are postured for what the situation they're in at that point. He was postured to be one of the leading players on a team that was going to go through transition. When they signed that deal, guys, they knew that Chicago was going south. And that's not where he is right now. And so signing a new contract, I'd be highly interested in making him part of the future going forward. But it would be, you know, a long-term deal, and it wouldn't be starting with a nine.
What would it start with?
I think you have to see how this year plays out.
Yeah.
And I think both the player and the club roll the dice and see how this year plays out. And then I think it starts with something that fits in your salary structure, not in the league salary structure.
Right.
And that's where we talked about the importance of having Brady Tkachuk done at a number. And that is done.
All right. On that note, we'll let you go and appreciate the time and the insight as always. Look forward to chatting with you again on Wednesday.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, it only took 68 seconds of the game for Alphonso Davies to score the goal. Let's be honest. How many of you weren't sitting down or weren't watching because it's like, it's soccer. They kick it around for a few minutes and there's really nothing that goes on for the first 5-8 minutes of the game. More than a few people probably got caught doing that. But what a moment it was yesterday as Davies heads in that goal. Beautiful goal. Unfortunately, from a Canada point of view, that's as good as it got, as Croatia would come back and score a 4-1 victory. To the Gabriel Pizza Hotline we go, and we welcome our soccer analyst. It's a great day for Motikar Hissing. We say good morning to Gordon Smith. How are you doing this morning, Gordon?
I'm good, lad. You know, if you did this properly and you started pounding the pints after Davies scored that goal, you're waking up this morning and you're asking, did we win or not?
I thought we were on our way to winning the whole World Cup in the first 5 minutes. And by the end, it was like the confetti was done.
it was a strange day. I mean, you know, you've got to go back to the sort of whole expectation thing after Wednesday and coach's comments. We'll probably get into that during the discussion. But, at the end of 90 minutes, there was just an overall feeling of deflation, disappointment, every other D word you came up with, maybe even a couple of F words thrown in there as well. Because it was just, it was unfortunate. I mean, you know, the expectation was there. We had, you know, the excitement when the game started, the euphoria when we scored. And then as the game went on, there was this exasperation that just, it was not going to happen for us. And in the end, you know, certainly Croatia's quality shone through. And I think that's the one thing that a lot of people looked at, certainly when the draw was made. I always thought Croatia was going to be the tougher of the three games. That obviously has, you know, possibly played itself out the way the group has gone. And you really have to look at the bigger picture and say, are Belgium really the team that a lot of people think they are as the number two ranked team in the world, or are they a wee bit of a group of imposters right now? Because they have looked terrible in their two matches so far. But getting back to Canada, yes, it was a wonderful moment. We'll never forget where we were. It's like, you know, every major goal Canada's ever scored in world hockey, where were you? Well, you know, I was sitting in my basement on my recliner and just about jumped off and woke up in the neighbourhood at 11:01 when that goal was scored.
How much, you know, for someone who's lived and breathed the game your entire life, how shocking would a goal, a minute and 8 seconds, be getting into it, especially a game played at this level, a World Cup game?
Well, I mean, it's like everything else. Emotion comes into it, right? So Canada goes in confident. We've had a good game against Belgium. We start the game off on the front foot. The long ball played out from the back into midfield. And then we just make a couple of nice quick passes, gets out onto the right. And then Davies comes flying in, leaping like a salmon. My goodness. I mean, the height he got on that to get on the end of the cross was terrific. And then, you know, you get that goal and it's like this huge sigh of relief. We've scored a goal at the World Cup. We've accomplished a goal that we came here to set out for. But then you realise you've still got 89 plus minutes of the game to go. And it's like, okay, so Croatia, in fact, even for the first 15, 20 minutes of the game, Canada was, you know, trading punches with Croatia, a world-class team. And then I think at that point, Croatia just says, okay, enough's enough. Let's just start playing our game in the way we want to play. And they just, you know, put it into second, then put it into third, and just kept going as the game went on. But you've got to try and get that first goal over and done with. And I think we did a good job initially of that. But as the game wore on, it was more or less Croatia just becoming Croatia in the Croatia we expected. And that's how the game played out after 90 minutes.
If Canada, this whole thing of Canada getting its first goal at a World Cup, I understand why that's such a great moment. But if, let's say, you know, our previous only time to the World Cup in 1986, let's say for sake of an argument, we actually got a goal then. So this whole storyline of Canada gets its first goal isn't a part of this World Cup narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Does yesterday's game change? Like, I guess my question is, was there just partly kind of a giant exhale from the Canadian, from fans to players to manager of, well, we checked that box, we've scored a goal at the World Cup, and I don't want to say they took their eye off the ball. Croatia was the better side. No doubt about that. But did that play a role in what we saw play out yesterday?
Yeah, I think when you go in with such defined goals like we did, and I mean, it may a lot have come from the fan base than anything else. I think internally the team was wanting points, the team was wanting wins, and that's, you know, your expectation when you go to these major tournaments, even as an underdog, as a Saudi Arabia and a Japan and and Morocco have shown over the course of the last week to 10 days. You know, if the fan base are looking at it, you're checking these boxes. Okay, we want our first goal, we want our first point, we want our first win. And when you get one of these, all of a sudden, there is that sort of, okay, well, hey, great, it's been a success. Well, again, if the goal comes in the 70th minute and it ties it up at 1-1, then there's a different way of looking at it than if the goal gives you a 1-0 lead in the 68th second, because you do realise there's still a lot of work to be done. And yeah, it's unfortunate how the rest of the game played out, but, you know, it's like, you know, we'll always have that first ever goal. And as you said, if it had came in 86, I think the next goal would have been, we want to get our first point. And if we get our first point, then that would have been deemed as a success. So we got the goal. Let's just move on to our next, a final game against Morocco that, you know, it's pretty much a dead rubber for us. But for them, it's not. It does mean an awful lot to Morocco as far as, you know, they pick up a point, they're more likely through into the next round. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that we sometimes have these levels that we want to attain. For me, it's all about getting out of the group. That's what makes a successful World Cup. We didn't do that, so it's a successful World Cup for us still. I suppose we're there. We did get our goal. Let's just look at that, build up to 2026 and move on to the next tournament.
What did you think of Herdman's lineup decisions and just tactical approach?
Aha, Simon, now you're thinking like a coach here. I thought, and a lot of people that I chatted with, not only before, during and after, thought that he got it wrong. And, you know, the guy's paid to make those decisions, and he obviously felt for different reasons that he wanted to go with that sort of 3-4-3 formation with only two central midfielders. And I think when a lot of us looked at that initially, we thought, poof, we're going up against one of the top three midfield units in the world. How do you expect just to compete in the middle of the park, which is so crucial, against such well-organised and world-class players? And as it turned out, we didn't. You know, we had a 39-year-old who hasn't played a lot of football lately with injury, and he came through the game on Wednesday and certainly did look within the first 10 minutes to be very jaded in Atiba Hutchinson. He had Stefan Eustachio coming in into the World Cup nursing a bit of an injury. And then obviously, you know, he does get injured and has to come off at around the 30-some-odd minute mark or even at half-time after getting injured. So you have these scenarios where a third midfielder, I think, would have made a huge difference as to how the game played out. Listen, Croatia was probably still going to win based on their pre-game motivation about what had happened before going into the game and all these kind of things. But I think you're right, Simmer. I think tactics, if you look back at it, he possibly would have gone with a third midfielder and maybe, you know, even a 4-3-3 formation that might just allow a little bit more, you know, strength in the middle of the park as opposed to having just two in the middle, two out wide like we played with. And that really limited us in central midfield. We talked last week about getting possibly Kyle Larin into the starting lineup, and he did. He kind of shoehorned him in there with David sort of starting out wide on the right and then pulling into the middle every once in a while. But in retrospect, that may or may not have been the right move. And I don't necessarily mean playing Larin. I just necessarily mean, you know, not just having that one out-and-out striker and then having, you know, sort of more of a defensive structure to you as far as trying to pick up at least a point there or even snatch a win. But I think that overall the big mistake was only having two in central midfield. And unfortunately, That's how the game played out. We did get overrun a little bit in that area of the park. And once we made some changes in the second half and sort of looked things a little bit more different, it kind of shored itself up a little bit. But by then, the damage was done.
With our TSN 1200 soccer analyst, Gordon Smith, Ottawa's Jonathan David was touted to be somebody who might be a breakthrough player, not only for Canada, but perhaps in the entire tournament, and he was awfully quiet in game one and yesterday as well, had the one chance and then get subbed out. Do you believe that other sides are giving him special attention, or is he maybe not performing as well as he should be?
Well, when your main responsibility is scoring goals as a goal scorer and you don't score goals, then the spotlight is going to be shone on you. And the unfortunate part is that these type of tournaments, he is going up against the cream of the cream. He's going up against the top-notch defenders in the world. And as a striker, it's all about getting the service. You've got to get proper balls, proper crosses into your area of the park. And I think we just haven't been getting the ball to him enough. Now, has a lot of it possibly been of his own accord that he's fit? Possibly. You know, his first touch maybe not hasn't been as good as possible. When he does get a chance to shoot at it, he's snatching at balls. He's maybe not that little bit of composure that's needed at this top level to make sure that you get, a strike on target, and that you beat the goalkeeper or make the goalkeeper work. So I think there's probably a few things coming into play with Jonathan David, but, you know, we know he's still a quality player and he will go on to bigger and better things. But I think right now, you know, he's been up against, you know, Belgium. I mean, they aren't exactly the best defensive team in the world, but they still did a decent enough job of keeping them fairly quiet. Croatia yesterday, a little bit better defensively, did an even better job of keeping them quiet, and Kyle Larin quiet. I think one of the bigger things is that you look at that first 15, 20 minutes, Jonathan, Alphonso Davies was having a free rein almost down that left-hand side. He was given their diminutive, I'll say, short right-back a hell of a time. And then for some reason, we just got away from that approach. So when Davies has not got the ball at his feet and he's not creating opportunities possibly for David, it does make it difficult for Jonathan to try and find that space to get a quality ball, to get a decent shot away, to possibly score a goal. So it's not been the best of 180 minutes for him, but fingers crossed if he gets the opportunity against Morocco. He does not only show, you know, Canada and the rest of the world, but the rest of the world, what he can do on the football pitch if he's given quality service.
How much do we also factor in when you look at his path? And I know it's been a quick ascension, but this isn't like Davies, who plays for Bayern Munich, that, hey, quite simply, this is a little bit overwhelming for a young man to be playing on the biggest stage against two of the soccer powers.
Yeah, it could be. You know, like the sports psychology that's in play these days, you know, obviously you go in there as if you're, you know, you're invincible. You're going to go in there and you're going to score a goal and you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And then you get inside the first 10, 15 minutes and you might realise, oof, I'm in for a rough ride here this afternoon. It's not going to be as sugar and candy as what we talk about coming into the game. And I think he's just got to learn from it, as most players in our Canadian squad will have to learn from these two games. When you're at the big table, you know, nobody's just going to pass you the plate. You've got to ask for it, and you've got to make sure that, you know, you're speaking up and you're making sure that you're demanding this and you're demanding that. And unfortunately, we just right now against the second and the 12th ranked team in the world going into this World Cup, we just have been showing up, unfortunately, as the 41st ranked team in the world coming into the 2022 Qatar World Cup.
So one game left against Morocco on Thursday, and the Moroccan side will be very motivated because if they get a result, they're going to move on out of the group stage for Canada.
Yeah.
They've been eliminated already, so we understand, at least through their words, of, hey, we want to get that first point, we want to get that first win. But there's also, Gordon, got to be that nagging feeling of, we came here, and was it just, I don't think, Canadian fans and Canadian media that created expectations? I think the world soccer, you know, people at large were saying, you know, Canada could be a bit of a darker, not to win it, but, you know, they could be a team that could do something, and instead we're going home after three games. So how will the Canadian players be motivated for Thursday's game?
I certainly hope they are. I mean, it's not like you're finishing out a Division 3 season at, you know, Gloucester Hornets in the Ottawa Carlton Soccer League. You're at world stage. People, now, when you get to the last games of the group stage, both games are played at the same time, so there's no, you know, funny business going on like there was back, I think it was the early 70s, where a couple of teams made sure they played out a pact of non-aggression draw that they would both go through. But the two games we've had, the entire world has been focused on Canada's game because it's the only game that's been on at that time slot. Now there will be a second game. I think more people will probably watch, outside of Canada, will be watching the Croatia-Belgium game because that's of great importance as well. But I think, you know, as you said, expectations coming in that Canada was going to do well. We came in as CONCACAF champions. I mean, the USA and Mexico have carried the torch in CONCACAF for decades. They really have. And sometimes they've done well. Sometimes they've gone to quarterfinals and what have you. And the expectation this year was that Canada was coming in as a top dog in CONCACAF and we were going to do well and hopefully get the business done, but it just hasn't happened.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll watch on Thursday. I'm going to ask you our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. What's your current feeling about Canada at the World Cup? Happy to be there, happy to score a goal, need a result versus Morocco, or disappointed? Gordon Smith, four choices. What's your choice?
Disappointed, and I've got to say that more about the Belgian game than anything else, because that was the game, as has been proven, with Belgium losing to Morocco. Maybe Belgium weren't as good as what everybody seems to think they were, and that number two ranking is a little bit of a millstone around their neck. So I'm disappointed as a whole. I'm not disappointed that we got there. I'm not disappointed how we played. I thought in spots we played very, very well. However, it's a results-based business, and unfortunately, the standings show we're bottom of the table with no points and we're eliminated already along with Qatar.
All right, there you go. Good insight. As always, appreciate the time, my friend. We'll chat again soon.
Cheers, lads. All the best.
All right, there's Gordon Smith joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. All right, stand by. Top of the hour news and sports update is on the way. Should tell you that Ghana is up 2-0 on South Korea, after the first half of their match currently underway. We'll keep our eye on that for you. Coming up at 11, and we're taking you up until then. We got Brazil versus Switzerland. That should be a good game coming up later on this morning here on TSN 1200. We'll take a break next hour. We'll talk some NFL with our football guy, Duke Ellingson. Eagles win the Sunday nighter over the Packers, and Aaron Rodgers is injured. Should he continue to play for a 4-8 Packer team? We'll get into that discussion in the next hour and revisit the night that was for the Sens as they win in overtime in LA 3-2 to finish up their road trip. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.